You've tuned in to Hub Talk, a podcast about teaching, learning, and technology.
Welcome back to Hub Talk. I'm Colin Stapp.
And I'm Bill Hamlin.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about accessibility.
Yeah, and you know, to some folks, accessibility might not be all that clear, especially for faculty here on campus or our online faculty. And when we talk about accessibility, we're talking about ensuring that all of our digital materials can be accessed and used by all students without having to wait or rely on others to assist them. And this is really central to the Shemeketa philosophy.
So Bill, you bring up a good point that when we're in the classroom, we often think about accessibility when we get an accommodation, such as needing to, probably the most common is captioning a video or things like that. Maybe making textbooks available electronically or other things like that. But sometimes when we get those accommodations, we don't always know exactly what they mean. Mm-hmm. They come from the Student Accessibility Services Office. We can follow up with them. We can follow up with the student. But there may be instructors that haven't had a lot of experience even getting an accommodation in their class. Do you get them very often in your teaching?
Well, you know, I've been teaching, oh man, what's it been, 6-7 years now, and I've really only had a handful. In my online classes, I've had, I don't know, less than 5 probably, and a lot of times they're simply, you know, the student needs a little extra time on quizzes or assignments, and they don't get much more detailed than that in some cases. And, you know, I can work directly with the student in most cases to, you know, make everything go smoothly. I did have one in a face-to-face class where a student needed an interpreter, and then any videos that I showed in class, I would need to caption. So that was kind of eye-opening to me because, you know, I've been going along for years teaching the same way, and then all of a sudden, oh, I got to go make sure all my videos are captioned. And a lot of the videos I used weren't my videos, but they were either on YouTube or you know, through the library and weren't captioned. So I had to make sure to, you know, follow up with anybody who could help me add that. But it was a learning experience. And, you know, it made me realize that when I get those accommodations, you know, there are some things that I can do on my own, some things I can get help with. And then as I'm creating new content down the road, you know, it's something to think about.
Yeah, for sure. And my experience is similar to yours. I haven't had the need to have an interpreter in class, but most of my accommodations have been in my face-to-face classes, and it has been extra time for quizzes or assignments. Sometimes it's providing an alternative space for completing the assignments. That sometimes a student needs white noise, or they just need a less cumbersome, maybe space to work on their assignments than in the classroom. I have a couple of accommodations this term, 2 in my face-to-face class and 1 in my online, and those are the extra time and providing an alternative text. So making sure that that's available electronically. It can be eye-opening. It can be maybe even a little bit scary if you're new to teaching or have been teaching a while and have never had an accommodation before, that it's a little unclear what you need to do or how you proceed, or I think maybe even that, you know, we don't want people to think that they're giving special attention to someone when really we're making sure that, like you said in the opening, that all students have equal access to the materials without having to wait or rely on anything.
Yeah, and I think that last bit about not having to wait or rely on others to assist them is really key. And when we think about accommodations in either face-to-face or online classes, you know, that can present delays if they have to wait for captioning to be added. Obviously, at that point, they're relying on other folks to assist in accessing that material. So there are ways we can kind of preemptively prepare for not only making our materials accessible for students who need those, but for all of our students, because as I think we'll find out, it's going to benefit everybody. So with that kind of overview of accessibility, we wanted to spend some time providing a couple different perspectives, one from the student side and one from the faculty side. And so in our next segment, Colin sits down with a student, Daniel Kamek, and discusses his experience here at Chemeketa with student accessibility services and accessibility in general.
And then in our final segment, Bill sits down and interviews Heather Marriger, who is our new accessibility advocate here in the Tech Hub in the Center of Academic Innovation. And she demystifies some myths about accessibility and talks about some easy steps that faculty can take to make their course materials accessible. So stay tuned. Okay, so we are with Daniel Kamek, who is a student here at Chemeketa Community College. And Daniel, thanks for joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, what you're studying, what you hope to do career-wise when you're done at Chemeketa?
So I am attempting to earn my associate's degree in business management and looking to, you know, broaden my career in an office or a department somewhere down the line.
Nice. How long have you been at Chemeketa so far?
Since 2016, summer term.
Tell us a little bit about, if you don't mind, your personal situation and why accessibility matters to you as a student.
So accessibility is huge for me. I'm legally blind, so my vision is 2600, to give you kind of an idea. So I need things really blown up, and I need to be able to hear to retain the lessons and, you know, the instructors' syllabuses and all that. So it matters to me, you know, time is huge because it takes longer for me to read, takes longer for me to do work. So having a time frame that's a little bit longer or, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit longer to read essays or paragraphs is huge just to get my work done. Mm-hmm. I kind of faced that in the beginning of my term, not having the accessibility, you know, not having some of the software and not having some of the things implemented in my first term, and it was a hard battle.
So you were mentioning that your vision is 2600,
right?
And that you have to have things magnified or blown up.
Correct.
What types of technology do you use that help you accomplish that?
Well, the main one is called Zoom Text, a software that enhances or it brings the visual of the screen larger, and also has a reader which reads things on the screen and different colors, different things that would help, you know, drown out glare, you know, different things like that. So
Zoom Text is more than just increasing the magnification, say on your laptop or a computer monitor or something like that.
Right. It's so it has, you know, you can split screens. It helps you can blow up one section, be able to type in another. It has some different functions on it that are really crucial to, mm-hmm. to be able to write papers and read.
So tell us just a little bit about your home computer system. Like, do you have it on a laptop or a desktop? Do you have more than one monitor?
So I have a laptop that has the software on it, and I plug it into a 32-inch monitor so it blows it up on the monitor, so they're piggy-tailed into each other.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's how my setup is.
Okay. That is enough to help you at least get through the course material.
Yes, I didn't have that my first term, and it was just blowing up the screen, touch screen with my laptop, and it mm-hmm. was.
So, what do you do about things like, say, printed materials or handouts that you get in a face-to-face class, or a printed textbook, or things like that?
Well, just the normal standard. I have a magnifier that blows it up, you know, 16 times the power. So I'm able to read most handouts. Some prints are really tiny, so it takes a little bit more photocopying and make it blown up, you know. Mm-hmm. So
really, having things digitally is much better for you, because then you can use Zoom text to make the accommodation that you need to be able to read a handout or a PDF or even the syllabus, correct?
Yeah, it's a lot more beneficial than having the physical paper, because I can do more with it.
Mm-hmm.
And more in a timely manner.
Yeah. And the Zoom text, you said it has a speech function, so it can read back to you. Is that how
correct?
That works?
Yes. It reads documents, it reads PDF, reads touch any point and click. Read on the screen. So
mm-hmm. Okay, what do you think some of the barriers that other students might face in online classes or in some of their classes here as far as accessibility?
Well, some things I faced early on, and I still do kind of once in a, you know, depends on the instructor, is getting my accommodations signed off on a timely manner. Some, you know, quizzes, you know, extra time for quizzes, and I don't have it 2 weeks into the term, then I am unable to finish the test, and it results in bad grades. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I've dealt with that. And, you know, there's others, accommodations as far as flexibility for schedule or deadlines, you know, big assignments take a lot of reading. I might not be able to hit that goal that they have on the syllabus. And if I don't have the accommodation already established, then I'm already behind the ball. And, mm-hmm. and it's quite the challenge already having disability, but the pressure adds more when you aren't able to function normally.
Okay, I can only imagine. So I'm just trying to think of maybe like I'm a pretty fast reader. So do you have any idea of a page of text, like out of a textbook, how long it might take you to read that with Zoom text and that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't give you exact time, but it took me probably, I mean, for page per page, full page, it's 30 minutes to read mm-hmm. a full page. You know, that's trying to retain what's being written. And it's a slow process to read.
Yeah. So that's really where that extra time, and that may not be what everyone understands about why extra time is needed, is just that, like you were saying, the reading and the comprehension and retaining, taking in everything that you're reading. So the same thing with quizzes. That's why it would be so important to have extra time for quizzes then, is to be able to read and retain what the questions are, formulate an answer, those types of things?
Yes. I mean, it's crucial, especially I'm on, you know, the time test, when I'm given a certain amount of time, and it takes me just that time just to read what I'm supposed to answer. It's quite the challenge. If I don't have that extra time to answer, then my grades are, I've experienced that. It's been, you know, I got 50% on a test because I only got 50 of it done.
Mm-hmm. That I could see how that would really be a challenge, not personally, but just that trying to overcome that challenge would be kind of unbearable sometimes, I could see. So you were talking a little bit about the steps for accommodation. Could you kind of outline how that process works here?
Well, you know, through my experiences, I register for classes, and then I get, you know, through the AIM system database, we go on and we apply for our accommodations, and the, you know, letter's sent out. Well, they have a couple, you know, instructors have a couple weeks into the term before they have to reply, and some instructors do that. They wait the whole 2 weeks. Some are right on it. Before even term starts, they have all the accommodations ready to go. And that makes it so much more smoother, especially for somebody that's, you know, as someone disabled, we don't like to, you know, look for help, or we don't really, I mean, we want to do the most we can with our own abilities.
Sure.
So it's hard to ask, it's hard to push as far as, you know, we're not getting help as far as, you know, the accommodations that we ask for, because mm-hmm. we need them. Mm-hmm. And it makes it, the term, it kind of, it gets a little stressful, and pressure comes on right in the beginning of term. It really, takes a while to get things smoothed out, and you're already behind the ball, and it just, you know, it becomes a snowball, and, you know, it's, I've experienced that in terms. It's just, it makes it difficult.
Yeah, it makes it difficult to overcome some of those odds that are stacked against you, I bet, at the beginning of the term. Like you said, if you don't have enough time for a quiz or reading and doing an assignment or things like that, it kind of sets you back a ways.
Right. And I mean, in my experience, because of my vision, I mean, like the writing classes are huge to have accommodations ready, because they take the longest. And so if I have a class that has a lot, I mean, each class is different. So there's some more reading than others. And the ones that have a lot of reading, it's crucial to have those right on time, because you get behind on those and then your grades go down and you just, and, you know, my GPA, I wish was higher, but it's some of those instances that make my grades go a little lower than I wanted. But
sure.
So
you've had some classes, though, that from the start of class have been more accessible and have allowed you to jump right into the material easier.
Yes, there's been some instructors that are, I mean, I've been wonderful. They've been, you know, very communicative. They communicated to me, email, let me know, hey, if there's anything else I missed, you know, the accommodations are signed off. Mm-hmm. And it's before term. I mean, it's for every couple, you know.
So there, in those instances, sometimes instructors are getting in touch with you ahead of time, but there's also, have there been instances where the course materials have been accessible, like the syllabus or things like that, that make it easier for you to
Yes, there's read? Been a few courses, you know, but most courses are pretty, you know, I don't know how it all works as far as each person or individual, how they would make it more accessible. A lot of the courses are online, because that's most of them I take on online. You got to kind of read through each one's a little bit different. They've got, you know, things kind of done in their custom way of how they set their class up. So you kind of have to play through it and look around and you know, read, start here. And you know, so each one's kind of a little different, but for the most part, been pretty accessible. Mm-hmm. There's been a couple that have been kind of a little bit confusing because they do a different format, and that's just part of it, I guess.
So you touched on two things. In our next segment of this episode, we're actually going to be interviewing our accessibility advocate in the Center of Academic Innovation, Heather, who is going to talk about how to make things accessible and some of the things that instructors can do to make things accessible from the get-go. But then you also just talked about the difference between courses. Can you kind of talk a little bit more about that? So if courses were more consistent in how they're laid out and designed, would that be a benefit to you?
It would be huge for me, because I'm a creature of habit. So I learn something and I continue it, because, you know, if I know that this on my desktop, I put all my icons in a certain place, so I know exactly where to go. I don't have to read it. I just go up to that area. I organize it. So if I had the whole the columns set in a certain area, it'd be huge for me. Then I wouldn't have to go searching and, you know, wonder where this is and looking at, click this to go here and click that to go here. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a couple courses I'm like, click, what?
Mm-hmm. So if the course has that, you mentioned it a minute ago, the start here. You know exactly where to start with that course, find things to get going, and then go to another folder that may say weekly lessons or something. If you know everything is organized in those areas, it makes it a lot easier, I would think.
Yes, huge. Most difficult courses are the ones that have different assignments in different areas. And if you don't look at, I mean, I understand reading of all the, click on every little button to find out what's going on, but it would be so much easier. The instructors have some that are just plain and simple, dialed in. Just here's your weekly assignments, here's your quizzes, click here, boom, boom, you're gone, and you don't miss anything. I've missed things because I've got a weekly assignment over here, I've got this other quiz over here in this section, you click here to go here. It's just like so many clicks to get to, and then sometimes I miss it because I don't remember. Mm-hmm.
I could imagine kind of be like a scavenger hunt in a way, yes. Maybe trying to find things,
yeah.
Which could be frustrating and stressful. adding to that stress of time and, you know, those different types of things as well.
Yeah. And it did enhance my, you know, like Nancy Drew clues, you know, maybe I, you know, trying to
That's good. No, I like that. Yeah, clues. That's good. So thinking about how technology is, you know, changing at a rapid pace and in kind of evolving, since you started at Chemeketa, how has technology evolved to either help or has it been a hindrance in any way? I mean, I would think with Zoom Text, that would be a great benefit. Did you have that when you started at Chemeketa?
They did not have it. They had it here, but didn't have it accessible where I was at. Mm-hmm. Then they got on and they got my computer all set up. There's been also glitches and updates. So Zoom Text is not perfect. I mean, it gets bogged down or it doesn't run. I've had just a couple days ago, it seized up and then got to restart and reboot. And so it still glitches, which, I mean, it happens so often. It's not a smooth process. So once I have Zoom Text, doesn't mean it's smooth sailing. It's, oh, he's got everything he needs. Well, there's many times with computers, it freezes up. Even though you have the best software, you have everything that it seems you're up to date, but somewhere in that computer world, it gets glitches and it's frozen up on me, and the pressure comes because of the time and. You know, I spend 2 hours trying to get this thing rebooted, and that just takes away. So those are issues that come up often, every term happened.
So in addition to the stresses of reading and needing that extra time, you're also having to kind of do a lot of your own computer support in a way to get Zoom Text to work.
Right.
Depending on what you're accessing. Do you find that you have maybe more problems if you're accessing other websites or third-party software?
Yeah, a lot of the, they have a lot of YouTube, videos, each class, which are helpful, but it's sometimes they don't clash with Zoom Text, and you have to, sometimes I have to do it, I have to turn off Zoom Text and just listen to the YouTube, mm-hmm. because sometimes it just doesn't click, and I don't know what the answer is to that, and I don't understand the whole dynamics, because each class is different. Some are smooth, some just go right through all every YouTube I could see on Zoom Text. I just had a class right in economics. Everything was smooth, no glitches, no. It went all. It was on YouTube, PBS, YouTube, uh-huh. and it went
and
smooth.
All the videos played just fine. Zoom right. Text,
everything worked. There's another class prior that. Glitch, and it's like I have to go here and do this, and I have to turn Zoom Text off just so I can make sure I get my assignment done. So mm-hmm. I don't understand the whole dynamics, but it is a continual battle.
Yeah. So tell us just a little bit, kind of changing gears. You work in student accessibility services, and that's your work study job, correct?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what you do and how you help other students.
So, I mean, for the most part, I proctor on the monitor, which helps having Zoom Text so I could see students take tests. Because mm-hmm. that wouldn't be good to proctor if I couldn't see what they're doing.
I can see that.
But I proctor students taking tests. I help, I scan and I insert a test with a copier and then file. I help students get on AIM to register for accommodations. Whatever little tasks they have, I just kind of a gopher too, and go here, go there.
I guess the big takeaway though is that there are a lot of different types of disabilities.
Several,
that maybe
we
overlook or don't always think about.
Yes, I mean, even I've learned, that there's other disabilities I really wasn't aware of until I worked in accessibility. Student accessibility services. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that there were, so many needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So have you ever thought of yourself as an advocate?
I would think yes. I mean, yes, because if you're not walking in the shoes, you don't really understand the different hurdles, I guess, in the lane. If you're not running the course in the lane, it's hard to understand. So somebody needs to tell, hey, mm-hmm. this is what it takes. A little bit more. It takes a little bit of this, maybe a little more understanding that most people, in my experience, aren't looking for handouts. We're not looking to try to, you know, get the upper hand. We're just trying to get somewhere where we can function normally. Mm-hmm. You know, where I can do a test and it's normal, my normal time because of what I've got to deal with.
Right.
I am a person that I would like to do it myself. I do not like to ask for help. So that's probably one of my faults because I got a barrier. I don't want people thinking that I'm just taking advantage of any kind of extra help, I guess.
Sure.
It's a big barrier. It is with the people that, you know, they don't want to burden somebody. We don't want to, you know, put a load on somebody or, you know, mm-hmm. inconvenience somebody. We just, you know, it's so it's a tough thing to really, it's tough to ask.
Yeah. Well, but like you said, being able to walk in those shoes, you know what it's like. And I would think, you know, working in student accessibility services kind of opens the possibilities that you have to work with other students and, you know, gives you different types of experiences working with others. And just letting us interview you, you are now an advocate because this is going to help instructors here at the college kind of realize more about what is involved in providing accessible materials, and it's more than just that accommodation letter. You've really provided a lot of insight as to what a person has to go through and the challenges that you have to go to. So I really thank you for your willingness to share with us your experiences.
Well, I mean, this is, I hope it helps because, you know, it is, technology is getting better and it's actually opening our world up as so far as somebody that is disabled. So if, you know, if we can use that technology to help, it's gonna help out the future.
Well, thank you for helping us with this episode about accessibility. And when we come back, we will be interviewing Heather Meriger, who is the digital accessibility advocate in the Center for Academic Innovation.
So we're here with Heather Meriger, our accessibility advocate here in the Center for Academic Innovation. Thank you for joining us, Heather.
Thank you for having me.
So we wanted to just chat with you, get to know you a little bit more, and get your take on accessibility. So why don't we start with just a little intro, background, and get to know you a little bit.
Okay, hi. I like to tell everybody I'm a chef with delusions of grandeur. My background is hospitality. I started out in culinary arts and hospitality and was working on getting my master's in hospitality. Decided to get my PhD in instructional technology so I could be a better teacher. And while I was working on my PhD, I ended up getting an assistantship at the Center for Persons with Disabilities at Utah State University. And I started there, and it just kind of changed my life. I learned about all of these things that, you know, how I could actually use my hospitality skills to help people actually make their lives better. And I became very passionate about the accessibility, making sure that everyone had access and equal and equitable access to digital materials and to the internet. And my life took a left turn, and I have been a passionate accessibility advocate ever since.
Quite the path. So what brings you to Chemeketa then? How did that play out?
Well, I was so lucky. I was brought here to be the accessibility advocate. And one of the things that really drew me here was I was looking at your website, and it says Chemeketa is Native American for place of peace. And they interpret it to mean everyone is welcome here. And that just really spoke to me that, you know, I'm passionate about making sure that everyone is welcome and is included in that in that message.
That's great. So with your experience in accessibility, is there like a niche or a specialty, or I'm just trying to think about it in terms of, are we talking about, you know, ADA accommodations in terms of physical spaces, or are you more in the digital realm? Where does most of your work lie?
My passion is in the digital realm.
Okay.
There's a lot of rules and regulations about, you know, and everybody, there's kind of, they've kind of gotten into the groove about what needs to happen in the physical world. Mm-hmm. But the internet is the Wild West, and the digital okay. materials are the Wild West. We're just starting to learn, and it changes so quickly. And part of the problem is that you know, when the ADA was written, the internet was just new. Digital materials were very new, but And so they were not written explicitly into the ADA, so there aren't specific rules, although they are part of the spirit and the White House and the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Department of Justice, have all clarified that accessibility, the digital world, does count as part of the ADA, and they are working to change those rules. There's an awful lot of information, and a lot of people need help on getting that information and understanding it.
Sure.
There's a lot of things that can be done. You look at how, you know, people using screen readers, you people looking who are deaf, people who, you know, with cognitive or learning disabilities, all of these people, if there's a, there's lots of things you can do yourself to make those materials accessible and easier for them to use. And that's what I'm here to help you do.
Great. Yeah. And at a institution like Chemeketa with so many online classes, I'm sure that will become part of your daily life very quickly.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So you've touched on this a little bit, but maybe you could give us a little bit more in terms of why accessibility in education, in online education, and just in general is so very important.
Because education is so very important, and having access to that education, students who have to wait, who have to, who can't access the materials, who they get online and their materials are not available. They have to be, they have to wait for somebody else to help them. They have to rely on others, and that's not what education is about. That's not, they're not having the same experience as their peers, and education is essential for getting a job, for existing in this world anymore. You can't just get by without that education. Statistics show that, you know, without that education, you are less likely to, you're going to earn a lot less. You're less likely to be able to keep and maintain a job. Especially graduate degrees, higher education is essential anymore. You can, a high school diploma will not do it if you want to have a good life.
Yeah, so obviously accessibility extremely important. And thinking about it from a faculty perspective here on campus, with our online faculty, hybrid faculty, and frankly, even our campus-based faculty, I wanted to run some questions by you in an effort to maybe debunk some myths about accessibility that might be out there or that might be presenting barriers to faculty trying to incorporate better strategies around accessibility. So my first question then is, I think, probably fairly common among faculty, and that isn't creating accessible course materials up to an office like Student Accessibility Services here on campus?
Well, that has been the model for quite a long time. It's called the accommodation model, and it doesn't work.
Okay.
It creates second-class citizens. It makes those students held out. They don't have independence. They have to, you know, wait on those materials. A lot of times, it takes time for that machine to get rolling, and by the time they get those materials, they're 2-3 weeks, you know, months late in those classes. That means they can't participate with their peers. They're not having an equal experience. Mm-hmm. They are not, you know, they lose that sense of respect and pride, and they feel like, you know, they don't count. And it also, the accessibility service or student accessibility services, they're working on a lot of projects, a lot of people, and things that you can do to make that easier, and let them have the material, work on the things that they need to do, the resources. You know, it's a much better distribution of resources if you can take care of things that you can take care of.
Gotcha. So we're kind of leaning less on this more traditional accommodation model and more on collaborative.
Absolutely.
Effort between
everyone has a role.
Okay.
Faculty, you know, the faculty has a role to, you know, they make sure that their students are active participants in their course. It gives, you know, they, it promotes them as inclusive and equitable with their peers, and it's it also is a best practice. A lot of the things you do for accessibility also make things better better for all of your students.
Okay.
For example, students, you know, using captioning doesn't just help students with who are deaf. It helps students who are English as second language. It helps multimodal learners.
Oh,
it actually, they've shown that a lot of students, 70% of students who are not, do not have hearing impairments, use captions when they're looking at instructional videos because it helps to set that material.
Sure.
It also helps in places where you can't have sound or, you know, and a lot of the same techniques that you use to make things accessible also make things much more accessible for mobile tech. People, you know, a lot of people are using their phones, a lot of tablets, materials display differently. And those same, the same way that you make them accessible for for people using a screen reader, you're also making them accessible for people using their tablets and their phones.
Student
accessibility services absolutely still has a role.
Sure.
You know, there are a lot of things that you don't have, you know, the hard things, the things that, you know, are not simple for you to be able to just tick off. That's what they can take care of. And that gives them the time and the resources to do that. So the students aren't waiting as long to have to get those materials. And students also have a role. You know, okay. It's up to them to work with Student Accessibility Services and you to advocate and let them know what they need. And so everyone needs to take responsibility and work together to really create a inclusive learning environment.
Great, yeah. So I'm hearing that it's, as a faculty member, I'm not going to be relying purely on Student Accessibility Services to handle accommodations or help my students when needed. It's obviously something I'm going to be taking a very active role in. But my next question then, surrounding maybe a myth about accessibility, would be, well, if I'm going to be doing this type of work, it seems like it's going to be fairly hard work. Is that difficult?
No, it's actually kind of almost the opposite. A lot of the tools that you're going to be using will make your life easier.
Oh, okay.
A lot of the stuff is already built into things like Word and Google Docs, whatever you're using. Mm-hmm. A lot of the things that we're asking you to do is use styles and headings. That's a function of Word that you can put in, you click it, you don't have to format all of your materials individually. You can make your styles, you click a button and you can change them. You don't have to do everyone individually.
Oh, wow.
Using the list function actually makes it easier for a screen reader. And all you have to do is click a button, a toggle, and it makes the list for you, or makes, you know, lays out the list for you. It makes it a lot easier than tab, space, 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 asterisk, you know, put it in. So a lot of the tools make it easier. We're not asking you to do the coding. We're not asking you to get in there and, you know, get into the code and fix things. We're asking you to use the tools that are already available and make it easier for you. It's okay. Also actually going to make you a better teacher, because as you're working on things like, you know, putting in alternative text for graphics, it's going to make you stop and think, okay, is this graphic actually showing what I need it to be? Is it actually portraying what's important
sure.
to the course? And it's going to make you a lot more thoughtful and give you attention to help clarify what you're actually portraying and what message you're sending to students. And that's all students. So
excellent. Yeah. All right. So kind of piggybacking off of one of your last points there, as far as using images and different types of media in my course materials, if I have to make those materials more accessible, is that going to limit me in any way, my creativity, or just the way I create my documents and materials for my classes? Will that limit me?
Actually, no. It's almost the opposite.
Okay.
A lot of the things using graphics, using videos, using alternate means of representation are actually a key part of Universal Design for Learning, which is a part of accessibility. Providing multiple options, you know, multiple ways for people to look at things and learn things is really you should be doing anyway. It just basically is helping you to be mindful of best practices. When you're making those graphics, just make sure, you know, when you're putting on those graphics, just make sure to add the alternate text so that a screen reader can tell the student who can't see that picture what it looks like. Using headings will allow a student who can't see to be able to understand the different sections of your paper. And graphics, you know, and again, it's going to help you pick those graphics that really portray your message. A lot of the materials are really actually, you know, you're encouraged to be creative. You're encouraged to try and find new and interesting ways, because that adds interest. It's going to help all students, especially students, you know, who are multimodal learners or
yeah.
who in enhanced by seeing a picture and seeing and with the text. So.
Great. So on to my fourth question, then, kind of piggybacking on the last point you made there. With regard to accessibility and accommodations and helping my students who need that type of support, what if I don't have any students who have submitted accommodation requests, or I haven't in the past? So why would I necessarily want to put the work into creating accessible course materials?
Well, just because somebody doesn't register with the accessibility services doesn't mean that they don't have a disability. Mm. A lot of students have disabilities that are undiagnosed. A lot of students, they went through their high school programs as with an IEP and feel like it stigmatized them a bit. You know, they a lot of students are really reluctant to come and say, I need help, because they feel like it puts a kind of the red letter on them. It makes them feel different and not one of their peers. So a lot of them try and struggle through on their own. So the statistics say it's almost 10%, 8.5 to 10% of students do have some type of disability.
Wow.
And so you do have people in your class, whether you know it or not. Cognitive disabilities and learning disabilities in a lot of cases are not obvious. Things like dyslexia, it can go undiagnosed for years. A lot of the things you're doing, you know, that help all these students will also help all of your students. Things like clear writing and consistent layout, they don't help just students with disabilities. They help all students. Using multimodal representation, again, a lot of students learn differently, and it helps to kind of reinforce that their learning and their information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frankly, all you're doing really is doing best practices for learning and instruction. There's a lot out there. People tend to focus on the physical disabilities, but there are an awful lot of other things that come up, and you you help everyone when you help are thoughtful about how you create materials.
Right. And it sounds like if you are working in this mindset ahead of time, you're almost doing the work as you go rather than having to go back and fix things or
absolutely.
Address accommodations as they come up. You're being more proactive,
and it's gonna you're gonna end up with a better product. Think about it. Even in the physical world, you build a bathroom, then you have to go back and refit it for accessibility. It's never gonna look as good. It's never going to work as well, and it's gonna be a lot more. It's gonna take a lot more time and effort and expense to get it right. If you do it right in the first place, it's gonna be you're gonna be home free, and it's gonna look a lot better, and it's gonna promote you as practicing those good methods and being an inclusive and caring member of the community.
So that brings us to our last question, Heather. In terms of kind of myths around accessibility, or at least questions faculty might have, we've talked about this not necessarily being all on the shoulders of student accessibility services. It's not necessarily something that is hard or limiting, and it is something I would want to work on, even if I don't have any documented accommodation requests. But I still sometimes might feel that, I'm kind of working on this stuff on my own, or I'm working on my online class and I don't know where to start, or I don't know what resources I have available. Can you speak a little bit to that feeling faculty might have?
Oh, absolutely. That's why they brought me in. That's what I'm here for. I am here to help. Yeah. Our entire group is here to help. We we have resources. We're going to be doing some workshops and webinars. We have an open door policy. You can call us at any time, and we're more than happy to answer your questions. I'm currently right now working on a campaign to kind of lay out kind of the best practices, 8 things that you can do, very simple. Very easily, things to keep as a faculty without ever having to open a line of code or even think about anything that you're not doing anyway.
Oh, fantastic.
And I'll be talking more about that in later episodes.
Of
hope.
Of course, yes.
And we will have that on our websites. We'll be doing premiering it at the Tech Fair. So please come by, and we'd love to talk to you more about it. And as I said, my name's Heather. You can call me anytime.
Great. Thanks for joining us today, Heather. And this initial insight into accessibility. And like you said, I'm sure we'll be having you on our podcast quite a bit over the next year.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you. Thank you so much.
Hub Talk is produced by the Center for Academic Innovation at Shemecketa Community College. Visit our website, faculty.hub.shemecketa.edu, to find helpful resources about teaching, learning, and technology integration, along with video tutorials and more podcast episodes just like this one.